I'm Ebony K. Williams, your attorney at law and host. Welcome to Holding Court, where we analyze the very latest legal headlines everybody's already talking about. We dig into how the courts impact the culture. We break it all down for you, and we go straight from gavel to your news feed. And I promise you this, y'all, every single week, we're going to keep it a buck, keep it 100. Right, Dustin Ross?
That's right, Ebony. Let's go ahead and hold court.
Let's do it. Dustin, my love, how was your weekend?
Listen, Ebony, it was 80 damn degrees on Sunday in New York City. So how was. You think my weekend was?
Listen, I know you were a hot boy in the streets. I saw your Instagram.
Just a little bit. I was actually...
Chest out, with your chest out.
Just a teensy weensy bit. I had to get just a little piece of the action, you know, but it was great. How was your weekend, E?
It was really lovely. I am so happy to be back in New York City. Praise be to God above.
Yes. Yes.
No shade to Miami. But I'm just, it's like I get off the plane, Dustin, and my swag just hits different.
It's an automatic feeling that you get.
It is.
Automatic.
It is.
Yes. Well, that's wonderful. I saw you looking good on Wendy's show.
Oh, thank you, my love. Yeah, you know, Miss Wendy, what do you think about that interview with Miss Wendy?
Listen, I think that you are a consummate professional, and I think that no matter what is lobbed your way in conversation, you know how to steer things on the right track, and that's exactly what you did. And not only did you do it that way, you was dripping in all that Balmain.
You know, that was dripping. Just a little just light work that my style team
said,
put together.
Look at my friend. I said, you know what? This is why. We ready for you, Ebony.
Thank you, baby. No, it was great. You know, Wendy's always a trip, but she is. She's the media mogul she is because she serves that unique brand of intrigue and shade and all the things we love Wendy for.
Yeah.
And it was fun. It was great. And it's always cool. You know, one thing that I love about doing shows like Wendy, this is true of The Breakfast Club, it hits live when it airs, but then the conversation around the content grows over days because it really lives on social, you know, and so people are still engaging with me around that amazing convo with Wendy.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and a lot of people really now curious around some of the, because that was really the first time, Dee, as you know, that I spoke publicly about what happened with my engagement.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
And so, you know, of course, people are going to see this play out starting this week on Roni. But it was a unique experience for me to open up that side of myself.
So, you were great. You were great, Ebony. It was very comfortable. It felt like we were talking to a friend.
Yes.
So it was great, Ebony.
Thank you, baby. So I had fun on that. And then I really enjoyed Sunday because I woke up and I went to get my coffee and I took my little fur baby Carrie down the street. She was acting bad as hell and spoiled ass. And I had to go to the newsstand.
And get what, Ebony?
And get a copy of the New York Post. And I saw it. Dustin, it was so crazy. Like,
surreal, right?
Yeah, because people were texting me because, you know, like, not to sound naive, but like, I knew that the spread, obviously, I shot the spread when I did the interview. I knew they were going to do a 2-page spread. What I didn't know was that they were actually going to put, you know, a little bit of me on the front page, which was amazing.
Page, baby. A cover girl. You better ask somebody.
Oh,
front page of the New York Post, girl. Look at you, Ebony.
It's dope. Yeah. So it's sitting on my coffee table right now. I got, only could get my hand on 3 copies, Chai. They don't print press like they used to, baby.
They don't. Because I went to the newsstand around my way and they didn't have any. So how?
What?
No New York Post.
Trifling.
So, everything's online now, but you want to archive special moments like that.
You know, my mom's going to come in town for Mother's Day, so I have to get a copy for Gloria's ass. Because I know she's going to want one. So, yeah. So, it was a great, great weekend. I feel very calm, to be honest. Like, a lot of people are like, how do you feel? How do you feel? I feel blessed. I feel humbled. I feel like, shit, I started filming this with my castmates in September of 2020, peak pandemic. So it just feels really, I don't know, like full circle to as we are slowly but surely coming out of this pandemic, you know, with our vaccinations, with our new CDC guidelines that say we can, you know, if you're vaccinated in full, you can be maskless outside. Like, the world is opening up, Dustin. And as the world opens up, to now be able to share this thing that we all worked really fucking hard to put together during the pandemic, it just feels very humbling, honestly. Just really humbling, really excited.
Well, we're ready for you, Ebony. I think this is going to be an amazing ride for you. And I cannot wait for the world to see why we all love you. So this is great.
Thank you, baby. That's what I was telling to my very best friend of 20-something years, Christina Jackson. I have two, her and mm-hmm. the show. So I'm like, I was telling Christina, I was like, you know, are you ready for the world to see how fucking crazy your best friend is? Because that's what yes. she was like, shout out, that's what's exactly about that. And I will say jurors have a sneak peek because y'all do see at least 50% of my crazy on holding mm-hmm, court. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, it's a process, Dustin. It's a process.
Well, we're ready for it, girl.
We're ready for it. I'm going to tell you what else I'm ready for getting into today's docket, Dustin. I'm ready for this motherfucking Derek Chauvin's ass to be sentenced to prison. I'm very ready for that.
Throw him under the jail. Throw him under the prison.
Well, I'm going to tell you who thinks like you, and that is Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison. He actually is ready for Chauvin's ass to be under the jail. So much so, D, that he's actually filed a brief saying as much, saying that mm-hmm. in addition to whatever standard sentencing Chauvin's looking at, which is, listen, he's going to be sentenced for the highest charge he was convicted of, which is second degree murder, a very serious charge.
Yes.
He could be looking at up to 30 years, 40 years, but because he's a first time offender, he would be looking at probably more realistically 15 years or less. But AG Keith Ellison is saying, you know what? What Derek Chauvin did and has been convicted of is so egregious that it warrants what the law calls an aggravated sentence. Let me tell you what an aggravated sentence is, D. It says that basically, if I can prove these five elements, then he should be sentenced above the average sentencing range. And I got to tell you, Dustin Ross, I was happy to see it because I agree with AG Keith Ellison here. The way in which Derek Chauvin killed brother George Floyd was not reasonable. It was not normal. And so the sentence should not be reasonable. It should be aggravated. So here are the five things. Ellison says that George Floyd was killed while he was in a particularly vulnerable position. He was a vulnerable victim. Why? Because he was literally on the ground as he was killed and having the breath snuffed out of him by Derek Chauvin's knee. He was in a position of significant risk of asphyxiation, which is exactly mm-hmm. what he died of. So that's the first thing. George Floyd was vulnerable. Number two, he was treated with particular cruelty, and the officers heard him crying out for his very life and to breathe air, and they ignored those pleas for help. So that's number two, particular cruelty. Number three, Derek Chauvin, as an officer, abused his position of authority. That's a big one, right? Because it's the inverse of what sometimes it feels the law is interpreted as if law enforcement gets more protection than the average citizen. It really should be the opposite, D. It should be if you or I go out and kill someone, my God, that's horrible. But the very people society charges with protecting and they actually impute murder, they should be sentenced much harsher.
I agree.
And that's what Keith Ellison's arguing. Mm-hmm. Number mm-hmm. four, Derek Chauvin committed the crime as a part of a group of three or more persons who all actively participated in the crime. And we know that to be the case because the other three motherfuckers are going to be tried later on this year.
That's right.
And number five, four of the individuals who witnessed the death of brother George Floyd were minors. One, Dustin, as young as 9 years old at the time.
Jesus Christ.
So that infliction of emotional trauma and stress to children, a particularly aggravating factor. So those are the five aggravators. How much time do you want Chauvin to get, Dustin? If you were the judge, what would he get?
The maximum possible sentence for each one of the charges all added together. Okay, that's what his ass would get. What
you said I love you want him most, to run consecutive.
Okay. Oh, consecutive, not concurrent, consecutive. Right. Mm. This, what I love the most about this is the type of work that we need to see these people doing that are in these positions to do this type of work. Mm-hmm. As state attorney general, releasing a brief like this or submitting a brief like this is exactly what you need. These five bullets sound to me like, let me make it crystal clear for you motherfuckers that this motherfucker is a murderer, mm-hmm. okay? Let me add in these extra details like the fact that a 9-year-old child witnessed this and is going to be, you know, subject to trauma, PTSD from this. All of these things are really just kind of rubbing it in. And I love that. I love that we're really conveying the the magnitude of just how horrible and how horrific this crime, this murder was. I love this. It is.
And it's important what you said too, Dustin, which is this is being done through the discretion of the elected Attorney General Keith Ellison. See how different his ass is than that motherfucking Kentucky, Daniel Cameron. Yes. Take a note, Daniel Cameron. This is what justice looks like.
This is the work.
This is the work. And I love the language. He's so articulate and specific in highlighting the aggravation here. In the brief, Keith Ellison and his office say this: Chauvin continued to press his knee into Mr. Floyd's neck and upper back until he was no longer speaking or breathing, and until he no longer had a pulse. See what he does there? It's almost like you can see it. Like you can visualize it. Yes. And feel it. And that's compelling. That is what we call persuasive legal writing. And we appreciate you, Brother Ellison, for the work that you are doing. Another little quick update on the case of Derek Chauvin's ass is that, you know, a lot of folks were curious as to whether or not he would appeal and if it would be successful. I just want to say once again, don't even worry about that, y'all. And I actually had a conversation for real. I had a conversation with the great brother, legal titan, Chris Stewart, who's a longtime friend of mine. A very high profile attorney, one of the many lawyers representing the Floyd family. I talked to him on Revolt Black News, Dustin, and he said that that's not even something you should give energy to. None of us should be concerned about this appeal. It's going to be dead in the water. Mm-hmm. And one of the additional reasons it's going to be dead on arrival is because the jurors, a few of them, are speaking out. Yes. And there was a brother by the name of Brandon Mitchell. He was juror number 52. He gave an interview to CBS News' Gail King. And he said something that was so emotionally heavy, Dustin. He said this. He said, it wasn't the pressure to come to a guilty verdict, but we were stressed because of the simple fact that every day we had to come in and watch a Black man die. Wow. That alone is stressful. So anything outside of that was secondary, just because as a human, it's natural to feel some kind of way as you're watching somebody in agony. And he goes on to say this, but it had a personal impact on me. There was a few days where I was like, I don't know how I'm going to make it in the next day, especially me as a Black man and a larger Black man. Mm. I'm about 6'4", 250 pounds. And some of the testimonies, like saying, how could he be considered a risk or a threat? Whereas I'm a gentle giant and stuff like that affects me in ways that is weird. And I don't know if it affected anyone else in the same way. Once again, Dustin, just, I know. And I mean, I'm Black, but I'm not a Black man. I just want to ask you what that feels like for you to hear your fellow Black man express that agony.
It's heartbreaking for me because it's something, it's a sentiment that I identify with and understand. Now, I may not be 6'4", but I'm 6'1". You know what I mean?
You're no shrinking violet. You know, you have presence.
Yeah. And so I think about this when I'm walking down sidewalks in New York City, when I'm passing the police, I get a shivering, a chill that washes over me because I just never know if it's going to be me. So I identify with this completely. And when he said what really stuck out to me beyond his personal account of his experience was when he said that anything outside of that was secondary, because just as a human, it's natural to feel some kind of way as you're watching someone in agony. Ebony, that is really it. That's what we've been trying to convey to all of these people as we watch numerous Black people die in the streets, after person, name after name. You don't feel that when you watch these people in agony and watch these people losing their life? He made such a great point in his statement.
It's a simple point, but you're right, Dustin. It's really the almost singular point we need to be focused with, because it comes down to one word, and that is humanity.
Thank you.
That is humanity. But see, here's where it gets nuanced. Of course, this brother, Brandon Mitchell, sees the humanity in his fellow brother, George Floyd, because he knows it personally. The problem is, and this is where I got to watch myself, Dustin, because I almost get upset because it felt like it took so many folks in America and the world, and especially white America, to see George Floyd in the most, and we talked about this on, I want to say, the first episode of Hold It Court, in the most subservient, vulnerable position imaginable,
humanly possible,
on the ground, just totally subjugated to the authority of whiteness, mm-hmm. for them to even contemplate this Black man's humanity. And then it was like, oh my God, what they've been saying has been true. Man. And I think the problem is that absent it being George Floyd under those circumstances, far too many Black people, and especially Black men, Dustin, are still not afforded that humanity, that simple, basic humanity. So that when people, other than a Brandon Mitchell, other than a fellow Black man, or other than a fellow Black woman, and hell, it breaks my heart to say what I'm about to say, but I got to say it. Sometimes folks that look like us don't recognize our own humanity.
Oftentimes.
Right? Because we've been conditioned and indoctrined with those same white supremacy notions that strip one another of that ability to be humanized. So I'm going to get off my soapbox, but I just want us to really tune into that. What you're saying right now, Dustin, is that this is really about our ability to sit with one another's humanity. And hopefully, Dustin, we get to a place where we don't have to be in the most dire, egregious, life-threatening circumstances to relish in that humanity.
Yes.
I'm a breathe for a minute. With that, I do want us to go to break. We're going to pay some bills. We're going to come back. And then we're going to talk about a case that you and I both have been watching closely. And that is what's going on, the legal goings on of the estate of Michael Jackson. Y'all know how I feel about Michael Jackson, but I'm going to put that personal feeling on the shelf to give y'all some real honest legal analysis when we come back. You got much more holding court in a minute. All right, y'all, welcome back to Holding Court. Now, a lot of jurors were in my DMs, Dustin. I don't know if they were up in yours. They were begging for us to cover this, and of course, we are going to.
Yes,
y'all saw the headlines. Another legal victory for the estate of Michael Joseph Jackson.
Yes.
Michael Joseph
Jackson. Joseph, okay?
Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
Don't call him daddy. It's Joseph.
Second of his name. There you go.
Okay. So basically what happened was Los Angeles County Superior Court Judge Mark A. Young, he dismissed the charge of Wade Robson. I'll get to exactly who that is in a minute for those of you that don't know. Wade sued the estate of Michael Jackson back in 2013 under a pretty interesting legal argument, D. He's basically saying this. He's saying that Michael Jackson's estate, particularly these two business entities, MJJ Productions and MJJ Ventures, okay? So those are two distinct legal entities, both under the domain control and executive leadership of Michael Jackson himself during, of course, his years alive and subsequent the estate. Wade is saying that because those business entities had a duty to protect him from harm as he engaged with Michael Jackson throughout his childhood and adolescence, I'll get to that in a minute, they failed to do so because he claims, of course, he was molested by Michael and thus he should be paid out. That's the legal claim. Let me tell you about who Wade Robson is for those who don't know.
I was going to say, you got it or you want me to do it?
No, actually, you go ahead and start.
You know which way I'm going to go with this. So let's get the business out the way first.
Let's get the business out the way and then you go ham. Then you go ham, Dustin. Okay. So Wade was a dance prodigy. Okay. Met Michael Jackson. He was a wee bit 5 years old. He, if you go back and look at old archive footage of Michael and performances, you will see this little Wade's ass, okay, on the stage and dancing and all this stuff. Wade then went on to have a huge career as a choreographer and dancer himself. Choreographed, of course, for Britney Spears, NSYNC, blah, 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 blah. Even had a little show for a hot minute. I think it was called the Wade Robson Project, all these things. Yes, it was. Yes, okay. Was a judge, I believe, on dancing, what you call it? So You Think You Can Dance?
Yep.
So he was a big deal, okay? And quiet as kept, they said that that was who Britney cheated with.
On
Justin. Okay, so that's Wade.
His profile, he would be in some mess like that, but go ahead.
Cry me a river, Dustin. Okay, so that's Wade. And now Wade, and here's another big, to me, chunky, important fact that goes to Wade's credibility. So Wade first testified in Michael's criminal molestation case back in 2005. But get this, as you know, Dustin, he testified in Michael's defense. He was 23 years old at the time, and he said that he also slept in Michael's bed and maintained there was never, ever, ever any molestation by Michael Jackson. Period. And I got some quotes from the testimony. This is straight from the transcript because I really wanted to know what he said, Dustin.
Mm-hmm. It's important.
It's important. So Michael Jackson's lawyer, Wade, has Mr. Jackson ever molested you? Quote from Wade, absolutely not. And I can tell you right now that if he had, I wouldn't be here right now. Okay, this is him on the witness stand under sworn oath. Then Jackson's lawyer says, has Mr. Jackson ever touched you in a sexual way? Want to know what he said, Justin? Never. I would never stand for it. Now, I'm not saying whether that's accurate or not. I just know at 23 years old, you put your hand on a Bible and you said this was the God's sworn truth. So that either means you were lying then or you're lying now. Mm-hmm. And at a minimum, okay, because I wasn't there. So I'm not about to sit up here and say what Michael Jackson did or didn't do. I just cannot do that. Mm-hmm. But what I will tell you is Wade Robson has some major credibility issues because there is at some point deception. That's a fact. That's a fact. And that's a position he put himself in, Dustin. Now, go off.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm going to make this short and sweet.
Yeah.
A lot of times you have to consider the source. Again, I think it is very important for us to make it clear that we are by no means negating anyone's sexual abuse claims here.
Hail to
what
the
we are doing is discussing the tangible, verifiable things on record, okay, mm-hmm. that tend to give us a window as to who Wade Robson is. Things like the fact that he was actually dating one of Michael Jackson's nieces, Jackie's daughter, for 7 years, I think it was. And that was during the time when it was rumored that Britney cheated on Justin Timberlake with him during that time.
See, he's had so many tie-ins.
Yeah, he's had so... They were together for like 7 years, Ebony.
Wow.
He had so many ties to the Jackson family. It's almost like he was just clinging to this... chance at stardom and chance at alignment with a superstar like that. His story has changed not once, not twice, but I believe 3 times on record now.
Yes.
It continues to change, and I believe that it's wasting everyone's time. And the reason that it pisses me off so much is because there are so many people who are making outcries for help, who are victims of sexual abuse, sexual assault at the hands of celebrities, at the hands of regular everyday Joes. So it just is offensive to me. It is something that is really disgusting. And this is a man who is deceased, who has children that are trying to find their way in this world. And you are continuing to keep this thing going unnecessarily, wasting legal resources, wasting time, money, and people's emotions, man. So I have no respect for Wade Robson.
Yep.
And I really want him to leave us alone. Figure it out. Go bust a move. Hit an 8 count. Go drop it down. Get on TikTok. Do something with your dance. Do something else. But go on away from us with
you. You're going to have to do something because it don't sound like he's going to ever get any legal recourse.
It's not
here.
Happening. It's not happening.
It's not. And I just want to put a button on one thing that you said that's very important. We are never going to sit up here and discredit or minimize the trauma and pain of so many young people who really do suffer at the hands of sexual molestation.
Never.
And in fact, the only reason that they were even able to continue these lawsuits, because they were originally dismissed, him and his basically, you know, kind of co-allegation person, this guy by the name of James Safechuck, and him and Wade were both the subjects of the 2020 HBO documentary Leaving Neverland, which is currently being sued by the Jackson estate. We'll get to that in another episode of Holding Court. 2017, a judge dismissed them for statute of limitations expiration. I think very good news, legislation in the state of California and has subsequently happened here in New York, that we are extending those statute of limitations for victims of child abuse that say that, you know, listen, it's realistic that you might not remember your abuse or trauma until later in adulthood. So that's a wonderful legal development.
Huge help.
But it ain't going to help Wade. Why? Mm-hmm. Because you're suing an estate for a dead man trying to get financial recourse, which I understand if indeed your allegations are true. But the legal claim is weak, Dustin Ross, because you're claiming that MJJ Productions and MJJ Ventures had a duty to protect you from harm, same as if the Boy Scouts of America or Girl Scouts of America or any kind of big organization needs to protect young people or people, period, right? From the torturous actions of its leaders.
Yes.
Well, the difference is MJJ Productions and MJJ Ventures were solely dominated and controlled and executed by Michael Jackson himself. They're not separate organizational entities like Boy Scouts or, you know, any other organization you could think of. So the judge said that dog doesn't hunt, legally speaking. Michael Jackson, those companies that you're speaking about had no exercise of control over Michael Jackson as an individual because they're his companies.
Yeah.
They're not outside entities. So you're going to have to find another recourse. And here's the other thing. It's sad, but true. If indeed any of these allegations that Wade is making are true, Dustin, this is the problem with bringing them after the person is deceased. That person is not here to grant their own defense. They're not here to be cross-examined or, you know, there's no legal recourse around testing the veracity, the viability rather of your allegation. So potentially, unfortunately for Wade Robson, it's just a no-go. And like you said, his ass gonna have to get on the TikTok or the
figure it out,
the Instagram or something, because legally this is a dead end for him.
Yep.
Dead end.
Although we've come to the end of the road. What a segue, huh?
You know I like how you tease that up. Because when we come back, jurors, you know, Dustin is just sharp as hell today. And really every day, but particularly today. He's teasing that when we come back, we're going to get into all things Wanya Morris, Candy Burris. Round one. Okay, we're going to get into all of this. These two are spilling a lot of tea, and I find it very interesting, both legally and just for the culture. So we're going to talk about it when we come back for much more Holding Court after this. All right, y'all, welcome back to Holding Court. Now, most of y'all have seen on the internet, there has been a situation where Candy was being interviewed. I just thought that this was legendary and not enough is being made about it. Who knew Eddie LaVert was out here interviewing folks? Like
me either.
Man, me either. And the brother looks good. Not for nothing. Because Eddie LaVert
looks good. Yes, he does.
Eddie LaVert got to be. Lord.
Except 80?
I think in the 80s. I think he's got to be. And he looks good. And I think that if it was
sharp,
and he pushed, he was giving me Barbara Walter vibes. Mm-hmm. You know, he pushed for the answer he wanted. And not because, okay, so if you haven't seen it, what Dustin and I are talking about is Candy is being interviewed by Eddie LaVert and I believe his granddaughter.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That was his granddaughter.
His granddaughter, right. And they're asking her if she ever, in her prolific career, as a performer and songwriter, if she ever ran into artists where there was a problem, if she had problematic engagement with particular artists. Right. And you could tell she doesn't really want to answer.
She was sort of apprehensive, yeah.
Very apprehensive. And Dustin, I think if it was anybody but Eddie LaVert or Smokey Robinson, you know, or somebody of that legendary stature, I don't think she would have answered it. But you're not going to not answer Eddie.
No.
So she gave the tea and she said Boys to Men. And it was interesting because I just rewatched both Candy's interview with Eddie and then, of course, Wanya's interview with some individuals I'm not familiar with. And really interesting stuff. So Candy's like, I had a falling out with Boys to Men. And Eddie's like, well, they can sing, can't they? Which was just hilarious. And she's like, oh, it wasn't the singing. It was their attitudes. And so she was vague. She pretty much just left it at that and just said they had a falling out because of, I guess, an attitudinal difference in session.
And remember, she was like, I have never, she said it really quickly, but she's like, I never felt so disrespected in my life.
She did say that.
Remember
that?
Which
is a very profound, big statement coming from Candy Burris, who has worked with a wide scope
I was watching that and my mouth was literally just open. I was like, whoa, because I could, it happened so quickly. I was like, I was just taking it all in. I couldn't believe that Candy Burrs was telling us about some situation with fucking Boys to Men in the studio from back in the day. So yeah. I was all in.
Well, yeah, like you said, that's a big statement. Never been so disrespected in my life. Okay. So then, of course, gotta watch what Wanye says. Two sides to every story. That's what my mama said. So when watching, and you could tell Wanye, I got the energy that he was still perturbed.
Definitely.
Yeah, right? Like, he was definitely, like, you know, on site, like, not feeling the energy at all. So he goes on to say that here's really what the issue was. They were in session, like Boys to Men and Candy and Shakespeare, the producer, of course, who I think he was indicating that Shakespeare and Candy were dating at the time.
Which was petty. And the first time he said it, remember he said that was her man. You know, I thought he meant like her homie or whatever.
No, I think he was down on that. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Which I think was intentional. I caught that petty too, Dustin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he did a couple petty things, but okay. So he said that and they were all writing. Now, this is where it gets nuanced, jurors. Follow us here. So Wanye concedes that he and Boyz II Men would write a lyric. Candy, maybe Shakespeare would write a lyric. He concedes that Candy wrote the hook to the song.
Yes, he did. He said that.
He said that. Okay? And then he says this. This is a quote. We've been taught that you write a song and you split, which is the industry reference to songwriting credits, down the middle. That way there's no discrepancies. We finished the song, and once we finished the song, she started talking about splits. And then in the next sentence, he backs that up, backpedals. Actually, the song wasn't finished, but she started talking about splits. Now, we're from the old school. This is Wanye still talking, y'all. We're from the A. You write a lyric, I'll write a lyric. It's really just about building this whole thing together. And she started talking about splits. And we sat there and we're like, splits? First of all, we didn't even finish the song yet. We didn't even finish writing the song yet. Why would you talk about splits? And then if you listen to him in the actual interview that he gives on an IG Live, he goes on to basically say that he feels like, this is where I think he was, what's the word? In his feelings. Yeah, because he feels that, and I'm sure he's speaking on behalf of Boyz II Men, that the talking about the business, because that's really what this shit's about, Dustin. Candy is talking about the business. And Wanye says that the bringing up of the business during the creative process stagnates. And that's the literal word he used. Stagnates the creative process. And that, I believe, is what we have here, ladies and gentlemen. That you've got Boyz II Men, Wanye Morris in particular, speaking on their behalf, talking about this thing from a creative standpoint. Then over here, you've got Candy Burrus, who's dealing with this entire scenario from a business standpoint. And therein lies the conflict.
That's it, Ebony.
Therein lies the rub. And then Wanye's ass goes on to stipulate and concede that Quiet is kept. What Candy was proposing at that time is now industry standard, which tells me, I don't know about you, Dust, but that tells me that Candy was positioned correctly the entire time.
Clearly.
She just was perhaps a little bit, either Candy was ahead of her time, or y'all's asses till the end of the road was slow about the shit.
That's right.
And didn't understand.
The minute that he said, Ebony, that Candy was right, which is basically what that was when he said that's the, you know, industry practice, industry standard now, that made me feel like, well, why even tell any of this story? At this point, you could just be like, yo, guess what, Candy, we did have a disagreement back in the day. If she ended up being right, though, that's crazy. Yeah. I forgot about that shit. Much love to Candy. Boom, we kept it moving. He didn't do that.
No.
When he acknowledged that Candy was actually right, it made everything else that he offered in that conversation void and ill-intentioned as well.
Ooh.
So you're just talking shit at this point. You're sharing these details and adding these shady layers that I'll let you disclose, Ebony. But you're doing that for what, my nigga? Like, you're literally just starting talking shit at this point because you didn't like the fact that she simply brought the situation up. Candy didn't share any details. She didn't name any members, you know, identify any members specifically. She literally just made a general statement about a bad experience in the studio with Boyz II Men. That's it. And you know my motto, E, keep it player. You know what I'm saying? So none of this really is in alignment with my personal values.
At all.
But he said some things in that dialogue that were, he challenged her credibility, the legitimacy of her work, her contributions to the music industry. Her vocal ability. He like went in and Candy didn't. And so for me, that's why I feel like he's the person who's wrong in this situation. And I hope Candy comes back and say something about them kids.
Wait, hold on. Wait. Well, I was just...
There ain't nothing even wrong with his kids. You but damn what? If you want to talk shit, we going to talk it.
You
okay?
You shocked the shit out of me with that one. So, oh my God, your ass is shell, as we say in the country. Dustin, your ass is all the way shell, okay? Woo! So, I totally concur. Wanya is completely wrong because Wanya is not being a professional. That's really what this shit comes down to.
Yes.
Candy, and even in session, I understand what she's saying. It's like, let's not even continue until we have alignment and agreement as to what the splits are going to look like. Because now, that's how shit gets started.
Mm-hmm. Let me say this. And this is, I did not mean to cut you off in the middle of your thoughts, so I'm sorry, but this just came to me. Mm-hmm. You and I do business together, right?
We do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We have a mutual respect for the work that we do together. We have a respect for each other's professionally.
Yep.
We take care of our business and we have a respect for what the business being taken care of means to the success of our situation. Wanya should have had that POV. Why was that a personal attack against you?
Because he's not a professional. That's what you, the first thing you said, Dustin, we do business together as professionals.
Yeah.
You're a professional. I'm a professional. Even when I first picked up the phone to call you, it was with the respect of you and your professional capacity.
Ebony, okay? For real. And I appreciated that, which made me eager to be as respectful to yours in the capacity of us working in every way.
But
that's what I don't understand. Why did he take that?
He's
why
not did a profession. Because he's, okay, it's people that are in the profession and it doesn't mean they're professionals. Yeah. See what I'm saying? It's a difference. It's a distinction. Wanya is in the profession. Motherfucker's not a professional. I can tell that because even at the end of his, what you call the shit, the IG Live,
right?
He hit you with the most uncle ass shade, which is, I could take her or leave her. Now, if that's it, when somebody says, I could take you or leave you,
man,
put a fork in it. It's done. Done.
Yep.
It's done.
They were being very ghetto and careless. Boyz II Men is such a legacy group, you know, R&B marquee group. And his wife is in the background of an Instagram Live talking about she want to go over Candy's house.
What are we talking about?
Yeah, go. You got how many children? Don't they have 6 kids?
And I was going to tell you, I'm a stan for Juan Moore, okay? If y'all don't know, these young brothers and the sister, everybody
all
can fucking sing,
sang
their faces off. So I want Wanya and his wife to get off the fucking live. They actually should be on the phone with Clive Davis right now. Okay.
Seriously.
And anybody else in the record industry that can really magnify these young men, because I don't know why these young men are still on Instagram, you know, because their
ghetto ass parents are also on Instagram being ghetto. That's why. That's what that is. That's why. And it's a shame. Boyz II Men, they're above this sort of engagement, this conversation. When we talk about Boyz II Men in the media, it should not be attached to something as messy and as this.
So messy. My first thought. I'm just like, why is this energy, all this energy should be
should
geared
be
towards
so
the magnifying
it.
Of, yeah, this next generation of talent, because people can't even sing no more, you know,
they
truth
can't.
Be told. So, when I'm looking for my feel of just singing, I literally go through the archives. I've spent up to an hour. You know, I'm not afraid to admit it, Dustin Ross, you know, on the Juan Moore page, just going down
the covers. I was blown away by those children singing. The 2 girls and 4 boys.
The girls, too. Right.
The girls are bad to the bone. They can all sing.
Yes.
And I just don't understand why this is what we're focused on when we have all this talent. get your generational wealth together and put them kids there in a group and get their ownership of the music together. And let's keep this thing rolling. You have bigger fish to fry.
I want to say one more thing. And I don't know Candy Burris personally. I've yet to meet the sister. But what I do know, based off of this situation we're talking about, based off of the recent headlines around Candy's movement, I'll call it navigation of the situation with Bravo, and what I'm referring to here, if you haven't read it, New York Magazine did what I think is an excellent journalistic profile on something that they're calling the soul of Bravo.
I agree.
And it's great. It's a great piece. I have a couple quotes in it. Other people have some quotes in it. But to me, Dustin, the most profound quotes I got from the whole damn piece were the Candy quotes. Because if you read the piece and you see how Candy is moving, Candy is explicit when she talks about when the uprisings of 2020 happened in the wake of George Floyd, and basically everybody, including the network, realized we need to do something. Candy, to my understanding, was the only individual that actually took a clear and articulable list of action items to the network to be executed.
Now, what did she take to the network, Ebony? Just so that
I'm gonna run them down. Exactly.
What did she take? Because that's it. You said something, Ebony.
Yes, she took number one. Why are there no Black production companies that have pre-approval for full throttle technical production of Bravo content? Mm-hmm. That's a problem. And as Candy talks about in the piece, and if, you know, talked about in real life, many of us, including myself, and you know, we all have production companies, you know, that are front facing.
Yeah.
But she's talking about production companies that literally run the cameras, run the lights, run the audio. Yes, that actually create the infrastructure to develop this wonderful content that we all do from an editorial creative lens. That's number one. She said, Bravo, I want to see several Black-owned technical production companies pre-approved to make Bravo content. Yep. And guess what, Dustin? It happened. And right now, there are not one, but more than one Black-owned technical production companies that are currently doing Bravo content. Immediate change in action and course. Also, she said, I want a pipeline where there are more graduates from HBCUs that are going into the network page program. For those that don't know, the network's page program is the introductory part of the pipeline that says you can go in from a page. Next thing you know, you're a production assistant, or you're a broadcast assistant, and then you're a manager, and then you're a director, and then you're a VP, and then you're an executive. That's how it works. So Candy's saying, I want to see a direct invitation to graduates and students coming from HBCUs to be interns for the network and to be introduced to this page pipeline program. It's happening.
Boom.
Another thing Candy said she wanted to see was an elevation of promotions of Black executives at the network. Yep. You know, there are Black people that work for the network, of course, but are they being supported, promoted, and being facilitated to the highest echelons of corporate leadership?
Yeah.
So, and that's just a few, you know, of the things that I can just remember off the top of my head. So when I read it, Dustin, I said, okay, Candy's operating really on a different level. You know, I'm just going to say it plain. This is a woman. I'm sorry. And I just have to say it the way I read it. This is a woman that is understanding on a visceral level the way you have to navigate these corporate spaces and the way in which you have to demand courses of action that actually make impactful, systematic change for Black people at the highest levels. And that's what I see Candy Burris doing. So I think that's applicable. Interpret that how you want. I think it's applicable to the way I now understand and so deeply respect the way she's moving with this network that I'm affiliated with now, Bravo.
Yes.
And our parent network, to be clear, which touches damn near 50% of media, okay?
Yes.
And then you've got it here with this Wanye shit. You know, she is just a woman. And listen, here's the reality. It's not going to sit well with everybody, Dustin. You know this. When you come into a space and you lead with the business and you lead with the perception of, you know, a business-like mindset and professional movement, it ain't for everybody.
Ooh, you said a mouthful, Ebony.
Did I say too much?
It's not for everybody. And that's what
I'm about to say too much.
But you said too much just the right way. That's the thing. And it was necessary information because guess what? You're right. Candy was moving in ways that were efficient, ways that were getting things done. Excuse me. Like you said, she had a list of action items that would lead to equitable opportunities for Black people in entertainment.
And in systematic ways, you know, versus one-offs. And I'm not knocking one-offs. One-offs can be a step towards progress.
Progress is progress.
And progress is progress. And we love it all the same. But Dustin, if we have a choice between a one-off and in implementing a structure that gives us systematic, continual, sustained change and equity, come on. Well, okay. I'm going to say one more thing. It's probably too much. I don't give a fuck. It's my show.
That's right.
When people move the way Candy is moving for some reason, and I'm very pragmatic and not an overly emotional person when it comes to shit like this, so I don't get it. But people seem to take that movement personally. And that's the rub. I think that's what we're seeing with the Wanye shit. Like you said, this woman is understanding, because I do think she tends to be a couple steps ahead of the game in all areas that she operates in. And so she was adopting what's now a standard modern practice of doing song credit sharing splits.
Yeah.
At a time that I guess it wasn't as customary for the old school, because Wanye said that about 15 fucking times in the IG live. I'm from the old school. All right, motherfucker, we get it.
You sound like it. Yeah.
Okay, well, Candy's not from the old school. Okay, this woman is with the modern business practice. There we go. And her operating that way, Wanye at least, and I guess the whole group, took it personally. And that's what I want to normalize, Dustin, is for people to not take another person's choice of business operation personally. It's not personal. It's the business. Period.
And there's a lot of layers to that, right? Like, you have to have, to me, the biggest component that needs to be present for business dealings to go successfully is respect. Simply respect.
Yeah.
If you have respect for the project, for the work that you're doing, if you're doing something that you love and is passionate for you, you want it to be in its best form.
Yeah.
And that takes people really staying in their lane and being good at what it is they're there to do. You have to have a respect for that. And that includes doing good business by people and with people. You know what I'm saying? Like, Wanye, please.
And you know, the last thing that it requires too is trust of intention. What I don't think was at play with this Wanye Boys to Men thing, I'll just stay there because that's the story we're talking about, was a trust of intention. I think, Dustin, sometimes when people, again, are moving in a strictly business format, people start getting like suspicious of motive. So now when Candy's just talking about a standard song share split issue, is she trying to take advantage of us? We don't move like that. What you trying to do? Why all of that suspicion? You know, that's the problem versus giving people maybe some either benefit of the doubt or just having more clarity around. Because that's the other thing. You shouldn't even be doing business with people if you don't trust their intention around
you. Hello, somebody. Hello.
Can we start there? Why are we doing business? I mean, let's go back to you and I and our business relationship. One of the strengths of our business relationship, Dustin, and I so appreciate you for it, is we have mutual trust of one another's intention.
Absolutely. So and I mean
if
that.
We're in, if we're in negotiation around a cycle, then it's you trust that I'm going to do the absolute best by you that I fiscally can.
Yeah.
And the minute that trust isn't there, we have a problem because that's it.
And that's why people need to be a little bit more selective and intentional about their choices when it comes to what they take on professionally. Mm-hmm. You could have been more selective about who you worked with. And damn it, if you didn't know Candy and if you didn't know her ways and her business practices,
her business
you
practices.
Should not have been working with her. Because now here we are 30 fucking years later and you're online.
And you talking about I can take it or leave it.
Thank
Bye.
You. And talking about this girl's voice and trying to diminish her accomplishments. That was just really, really trifling and sad to me, Ebony. And I you know, I'm all for a good, you know, battle. Okay. Mm-hmm. But that was just, it wasn't fair. It just wasn't fair to me.
No. And it really, like you said, and we'll wrap it up here. It really made him look bad. Very, you know, it was in his effort to make Candy look bad. He made his own ass look real bad and bitch like.
For sure.
But listen, jurors, we love and appreciate y'all. As always, we want to thank y'all for listening. Follow us, subscribe, give us a review, give us a rating. Keep hitting us up in our DMs and our comments, letting us know what stories you like, what you want to hear more of. Because Dustin and I, we read that shit, y'all. And we love you. And we love that y'all are co-producing this show with us. We truly do. Remember, y'all, Holding Court comes to you from Uppity Productions. It's an association with Dossy Media. And always presented by the Black Effect Network from iHeartRadio. Audio services provided by our people at One of One Productions, y'all. We love them so much.
Love them.
Please check them out. Go to their Instagram, their Facebook, oneofoneproductions.com. Join us next time when we are back in session each and every week here at Holding Court. And in the meantime, y'all, please stay safe, keep the faith. And as always, Dustin Ross, what should the people do?
Read them damn terms and them conditions.
And understand your business practices.